Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Thursday, March 10th, 2016. The former rebels of the SPLM in opposition say they cannot travel to Juba with light weapons.
They will not transport light machine gun like PKM or RPG-7. So now, partially, there is commitment from the donors that they can transport these forces without their organic weapons, which is a problem now.
And South Sudan National Police Service launched emergency response training in Wau after dozens of people were killed in deadly violence 2 weeks ago.
Tango! Tango!
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. After several meetings between the government and SPLM in opposition, the two sides reached an agreement on cantonment areas in Juba and Upper Nile, but still disagrees on locations for former rebel forces in Greater Equatoria and Bahr al-Ghazal region. The government says it treats armed groups in the two regions as separate rebellions. The SPLM in opposition says failure to locate cantonment areas in the Greater Equatoria and Bahr al-Ghazal areas will derail the peace process. Philip Thornaleo reports for VOA from Juba.
South Sudan Information Minister Michael Makwe said the government and the SPLM-IO agreed on how to transport the armed opposition forces to Juba. Makwe, who is also the acting government chief negotiator, says the government and the troika countries, the United States, Britain and Norway, will jointly transport the SPLM-IO forces who are expected to arrive in Juba ahead of their leader, Riek Machar. But he did not give specific dates. Makwe says the government will provide speedboats to move the opposition troops from their bases to Marakal.
All the forces that are assembled in Kaldak near Marakal, these are the forces that will be transported to Marakal by the government, and then the partners will transport them from Marakal to Juba by air. If these forces happen to be here in time, then definitely they will be followed by the arrival of Dr. Riek Machar to Juba, and thereafter we will be talking about the establishment of the transitional government of national unity.
Makwe says the date of the troop movement of SPLA in opposition to Juba will be decided later by the government and the troika countries. Taban Dengai, the leader of the SPLM-IO Adiban team in Juba, says forces loyal to Riek Machar cannot come to Juba without their heavy military equipment.
Now we have an obstacle. The troika that has money and the EU, they think that they cannot transport. They can only transport personnel with light machine gun, with light the weapons like AK-47, Kalashnikov, but they will not transport light machine gun like PKM or RPG-7. So now, partially, there is commitment from the donors that they can transport these forces without their organic weapons, which is a problem now.
Guy says that stand-up is still being discussed. He says the government's refusal to have rebel cantonment areas in Equatoria and Bahr al-Ghazal will likely derail the implementation of the peace agreement.
And we believe this peace is for the whole of the country. It's not for Upper Nile, it's not for Nuer, it's not for Dinka. It's for everybody, it's for the 64 tribes of the whole of the country. I want the public to know that this is a problem that may delay peace and that may even derail this peace.
Makwe insists the government does not recognize the rebels in Equatoria and Bahr al-Ghazal as part of the SPLA in opposition.
These people are not included in the agreement because the agreement says all those who were previously in combat are the ones that will be affected by the agreement. By previously in combat means those who have been fighting before the signing of the agreement. And anybody who started fighting after the agreement will not be considered as a combatant who will benefit from the cantonment.
Makwe acknowledges that it will be difficult to monitor the permanent ceasefire, but says efforts are underway to address that issue. He did not elaborate. Guy insists that the permanent ceasefire should cover the entire country, and he charges that government forces are still on the offensive in western and eastern Equatoria. That allegation could not be independently verified. For VOA News, I am Philip Tonaleu in Juba.
South Sudan National Police Service says it will soon introduce a police emergency call center in Wau, capital of the new state of Wau. More than 115 police officers completed a five-day training session on how to run an emergency call center and respond to emergencies. The government and the United Nations Development Program organized the training to help the police respond to emergencies on time. Michael Atit has this report for VOA from Wau.
That is Wau police officers learning international military phonetic alphabets. These alphabets will help the officers communicate in a special language during emergencies using very high frequency handheld Motorola radios. Dana Shrika Marker, the UNDP's capacity building specialist for a project called Access to Justice and the Rule of Law, says they want to provide these free services to the community because it is important to train police officers on how to respond to emergency calls. The emergency call number is 777. Merker says a similar initiative in Juba has helped reduce the crime rate in the capital over the past 2 years. Now, the citizens can call the mobile police patrol units, especially at night when robbers and other attackers often occurred.
Police cannot reach everywhere. There cannot be many police stations because we still have a lot many challenges. But yes, by way of the CCC, they can at least reach to the community members. So this number is a toll-free number. When they call 777, they will not be charged.
Merker says UNDP has so far train 161 police officers, including more than 20 female officers, on how to respond to the emergency calls in Wau. Speaking in Arabic, police officer Clara Valentino says she has learned how to operate the communication equipment in an emergency during the training.
We have learned about communication and how do I receive a call on Motorola. And how do I connect this call to the main center? And the action can be taken as quick as possible. I also learned about how do we fill the file with the correct information.
Michael Biol, another police officer who participated in the training, says the 5 days training has prepared him to better serve the community. Biol thinks the training should also be offered to other security agencies.
Not the police alone. We have also to ask if you could take this opportunity to involve those of prison unit and those of wildlife and the rest of the other organized forces so that we can also make a good work because we have a joint patrol in Wau. But if another officer from unit which is not being trained with a 777 is working and is given a Motorola and he don't know how to use it, that one will be difficult for him.
Biol says the joint night patrol has helped reduce the rate of night robberies in Wau since last year. Police Commissioner in Wau State, Major General Chol Tu Chol, says he believes once the emergency call center is set up, it will greatly benefit citizens. Speaking in Arabic, Chol urges police officers to dedicate themselves to use all the skills they have learned from the training to serve the community.
مثلا لما يكون كلام ساكت زي ما بقولوا هبر على ورق او كلام على هوا انا هنعتمد عليكم.
I don't want the training to end here like an ink in a paper, but we are going to depend on you guys, and we have to prove to our partners that this experience is still new in South Sudan and we can still do it. Like now Juba is going good in that. So, we in Wau, if we work more, we will be better than Juba.
28-year-old Asan Juma Suleiman, a Wau town resident, says she hopes once a call center is set up in Wau, police will do a better job of protecting residents and their properties.
In the beginning, I don't want to judge them before they could start their work, but if they can provide us with the security and all their logistic support put in place with all the equipment for running this kind of work, we don't have problem. It is a nice idea, and it will really be helpful if they can do their job according to their mandate.
Makar says the emergency call center will be officially launched in Wau next month after the government and UNDP installs the required equipment at the call center. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Wau.
The Sudanese government says the national dialogue initiated by President Omar Hassan al-Bashir 2 years ago has been successful. Authorities in Khartoum say the government will soon release its findings and recommendations of the dialogue to the public. Nabil Biagio reports for VOA from Khartoum.
The purpose of Sudan's national dialogue is to address the political, economic, security, and governance issues in the country. The 14-member National Dialogue Committee, known as the 7+7 mechanism, is expected to meet President Bashir and set a date for discussing the National Dialogue's final recommendations. Ahmed Bilal is Sudan's information minister.
We are almost coming to an end for the national dialogue, for both community dialogue and the political dialogue. The next step is going to be how to make arrangement for the differences which took place. And this is some exercise we do through mediators. After that, we'll hold a general meeting for the parties. We'll come and discuss the differences. And after that, we'll bring the whole thing in a document. We sign it all.
At the launch of the dialogue in 2014, major political parties like the National Ummah Party of Sadiq al-Mahdi and the then newly formed Reform Now Party of Ghazi Salah al-Din al-Atabani joined the process. The two parties, however, withdrew from the dialogue later, accusing the government of not allowing political freedoms and freedom of expression in the country. Other political parties and rebels from Darfur also boycotted the national dialogue. But Bilal insists the process will go on.
We will go with this document to be actually included in the next constitution, which is going to take place in the Sudan. And instead of this constitution, we should govern in Sudan now.
Critics of the government say the national dialogue will not solve Sudan's crisis, nor will it end the wars in Darfur, South Kordofan, and Blue Nile states. Haj Hamad is the executive director of the Social and Human Development Consultative Group, a Khartoum-based research think tank. He says the dialogue will give Mr. Bashir more power and legitimacy.
The minimum outcome should come out of the dialogue that they will amend the fences of the so-called Islamic movement, because it is already dispersed in the National People Congress, in the Reform Now, and in so many other important individuals who are defecting from the National Congress.
Hamad says the people of Sudan have little faith in the process.
We are confident that if this last chance was not taken, surely with such kind of a classic economic crisis and lack of basic needs, they may opt for a popular uprising.
Hamad says the government still has a chance to undertake the national dialogue in good faith and respond to the demands of the people of Sudan, which include ending the wars, guaranteeing political and social freedoms, and the formation of an inclusive government in the country.
The dialogue, in fact, is really at a crossroads. If the president would like to be more serious and have a political will to address the recommendations, they can have a leeway out, a safety valve, and they can move away from their old methods and business as usual. If they want still to continue on the using dialogue as just a manipulative tool, I think this is their last chance.
Besides the ongoing national dialogue, the government is also negotiating with several armed groups in Darfur, South Kordofan, and Blue Nile states. The African Union High Implementation Panel sponsored several peace negotiations in the Ethiopian capital Addis Ababa in an attempt to end the fighting in Sudan. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, we take a look at how children survive in conflict areas, including South Sudan. That story is coming up.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
how effective is civil society in your country?
In my country, for example, Malawi, I may say they are not effective because they are only there to advance their ideologies. They are not there to help the fellow citizens. So they are not effective at all.
On a scale of 1 to 10, I would give them a 6 because not all human rights groups are active enough for me.
In my country, South Sudan, you find civil society in most cases, they are the one implementing other things to do with the peace agreement, dissemination of the peace agreement to various communities. And of course, they are also trying to advocate for the top leaders at least to recognize that there is need for peace in South Sudan.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. Three civil society groups in the newly created Yei River State say they are working to empower more women and youth. As VOA fellow Tito Justin reports from Yei, women leaders in the state say they need to know how to make money.
The Center for Democracy and Development Organization, the Community Empowerment for Rehabilitation and Development, and the Center for Democracy Initiative in South Sudan are working to create awareness among youth and women on how to become involved in the decision-making process in the new state. The two-year project aimed at citizen engagement in governance is funded by the Open Society Initiative for Eastern Africa. Dara Felix David is the Senior Project Officer of the Center for Democracy and Development Organization.
We shall do advocacy on laws and policies that hinder political and socioeconomic progress, and we shall strengthen the capacities of our local government duty bearers. Particularly, we are going to do county and municipal strategic plan development. We are going to train our councillors so that they know how to adjudicate on issues that concerns the local people.
This is the third time civil societies are launching the same kind of project in Yei. The chairperson of the Yei Women's Association in the state says civil society organizations should focus on teaching women how to generate income. Nadia Rosalind says women could be more productive if given proper training.
There are some areas which they are supposed to tackle, and one of it is, you know, to empower the ladies. You know, most of the women during the war, they have not gone to school. And most of them, they have gone to school, but they have not finished their school. And they need to go for higher education, but they could not get the scholarships. But now this time, I want to did at least to change the system, get the categories of women, more especially those ones who have not gone to school, and give them life skill training.
Felix says civil society groups are willing to train more youth and women. But he says all that depends on donor funding to expand the project in Yei State.
What we are going to do is to focus on the specific areas, the four counties for time being, but we still have the desire to expand our activities once we secure more fundings from other donors.
The project will be implemented in Morobo, Kajukeji, Lanya, and Yei counties. The three civil societies groups have so far trained over 200 women and youth in Yei last year. The group say they expect to train even more once they receive more funding. For VOA News, I am Tito Justin in Yei.
Armed conflicts around the world show no sign of ending in 2015 and have had devastating impact on children. The special representative of the Secretary General for Children and Armed Conflict, Leila Zerugi, spoke to VOA Kim Louise about the fate of children in Nigeria, Somalia, Yemen, Iraq, Syria, and South Sudan.
We raised the major concern that we have is about extreme violence affecting children in area where extreme armed groups are operating, but also the counter response to these groups, counterterrorism in general, policy and military intervention, either inside the country or when it comes to area where you have now coalition, either coalition led by one country as it is in Yemen or several coalition as it is the case in Syria, in Iraq, but also, as you know, in Nigeria. So very dire situation. Children are recruited in huge number. Children are killed. They are maimed. Schools are occupied, destroyed, attacked, radicalization of very young children to commit violence. You know, the practice by Boko Haram, for example, of using girls as a suicide bomb. The large number of children recruited in South Sudan, in Somalia, and in other places. So these are the feature that we have. We have also the detention of children because of their association with armed groups, which is another challenge that we are facing, where children are not anymore treated as primarily as victims, but as a security threat and as a criminals, and they are detained without any legal framework, without any protection outside of the judicial system, far away from the juvenile system and the juvenile standards. We have so many children that have been killed during 2015, a high number in many contexts. I announced that this year was worse than the year before, and this is ongoing, same trend since 2013.
What are you calling for the international community to do regarding the conflicts that are going on and its effect on children?
We are, first of all, asking member states to take the necessary measures to mitigate the risk that children are facing when it comes to military operations, to respect international humanitarian law and human rights law and refugee law. We are asking those who are recruiting children and helping children to release the children. We are asking for proper program for reintegration of those who are released, because if we would like to prevent their re-recruitment, their abuse by other armed groups or parties, it's important that programs are in place. We are asking for protection of schools from military use and from attacks, because this is affecting the future of the next generation. We are also highlighting the progress made by some member states and the setback in some countries because of conflict or because of lack of will, as it is the case in Yemen, in Sudan, but also what is happening in Libya, in Syria, and Iraq.
The campaign Children Not Soldiers, it's in its second year now. So how successful has this campaign been?
We are very pleased with the result with the campaign, because first of all, we achieved progress out of the 7, 6 already signed an action plan. I am going at the end of the month to finalize the latest country that did not sign, Sudan. We are now in the final process and they already endorsed the draft and we will be signing, which means that all member states concerned adhere to the principle that they don't want children in their army and would like to turn the page for this recruitment. We have highlighted the progress made by Congo, by Afghanistan, under very difficult circumstances, DRC, Afghanistan, also working with Somalia, and as I said, Sudan. So this is the progress. We have, as I said, the setback in Yemen, the setback in South Sudan. It was also an opportunity for us to engage with non-state actors, because member states that are adhering to the principle are raising the concern with regard to the practice by non-state actors. We already engaged using the peace processes as a tool, an opportunity and space, working with the FARC in Colombia, working with the three armed group in Darfur. Riek Machar signed recently an action plan with the United Nations to end the practice in South Sudan. We need to make sure that Mao government forces be delisted in the next report and armed group adhere to the same principle.
That's Leila Zerouji, UN Special Representative for Children in Armed Conflict. She was speaking with VOA's Kim Lewis earlier today from Geneva. After weeks of disagreement over border demarcation, communities from Maridi and Iba counties of the newly created Maridi state have finally agreed to allocate a piece of land for the construction of the state headquarters at Ras Tigi. Gift Friday has that story for VOA from Juba.
The 12-member ad hoc committee, made up of representatives from both counties, selected Ras Tigi for the state secretariat headquarters. Iba County Paramount Chief Marona Fastino says, over the last 5 years, traditional leaders have since tried without success to resolve the border dispute. Speaking in Arabic, he says, the committee had a tough time convincing the two communities to agree on what land should be allocated for the new state capital.
The problem was a border dispute because the people of Maridi demarcated an area that the Iba people have claimed ownership of. The Iba people also demarcated areas that Maridi was not comfortable with, and that brought some disagreements between the chiefs of Iba and Maridi.
Faustino, a member of the ad hoc committee, says after thorough consultations, the committee has reached an agreement on the proposed site.
From Iba, they gave 1 kilometer and Maridi also gave 1 kilometer. That is 2 kilometers side by side in a bushy area. That was what we agreed on yesterday.
Faustino says now that they have a new state, the people of Maridi and Iba counties must coexist and work for the development of their state. Speaking in Arabic, Maridi County Paramount Chief James Bakindo accuses the state government of the former Western Equatoria state for failing to resolve border issues since 2005.
Since 2005, after South Sudan signed the CPA, the administrators and former governors were not serious about demarcating the borders. This brought confusion between the chiefs and the communities.
Bakindo is calling on the two communities to welcome the proposed site for their state headquarters, adding it is for the benefit of the local people.
It should not be that the government has grabbed land. The government has brought developments to the area, and you will benefit from it.
Daniel Odada, who heads the ad hoc committee, says the decision to build the state capital along the Maridi-Iba border was made in the interest of both communities.
For the order of the president to the governor, that I think the capital should not displace the commissioners or the people who are in the existing building of the government. So that comes to the plan of the governor to take the town in an ideal location. And the ideal location, definitely one of the proposed places is actually that site between Iba and Maridi. And that's whereby we find ourselves now getting to the border of Maridi and Iba.
Odada says it was challenging for the committee to reach a consensus with the local chiefs. Odada confirms that the two communities willingly donated the land to build the state capital.
The communities around there, all of them accepted willingly that the state government should now carry its own feasibility studies in the area, the radius of 4 by 2 kilometers in a rectangular form.
Kiri's unilateral decision to create 28 states has resulted into clashes within communities in Raja, Malakal, and there is a potential conflict between communities in eastern Equatoria and western Bahr al-Ghazal. Gift Friday for VOA News, Juba.
That's our show for this Thursday. We now leave you with the song Reconciliation by Kebas.
Yeah, that's all we need. That's all we're praying for. Leave it tell them say.
Umorvikeli manina masakin. Lakini na mistaka sebi. Umorvikeli manina deyipin. Lakini na idu ima. Lakini yomi na yam shitan daka to ras bitam gada bukuat la hadi lubari has no bad to call a friend. Forgiveness while I'm preaching. I have a strong desire burning like a fire. Let us take time making we can take it higher. This is a generation to change the nation through peace and reconciliation. Yes, yeah.
We have been listening to Kebas with that song, Reconciliation. I'm John Tanza in Washington. We are glad you could join us. Tune in again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Mm-hmm.
mon mikeli manina dei sin fin in ma mi consile solo.